Okay, is there reason to think God exists? Why does something exist rather than nothing? In seeking the best explanation, we begin with the question, does the universe have a beginning? Now, it's important to note, and you might want to underline this, no argument can provide certainty that God exists, but simply addresses whether theism is reasonable to believe, okay? It's not going to provide absolute mathematical certainty into the existence of God, but it is going to give us reasonable doubt to affirm it. Now, we realize, too, that apologetics, again, is for two reasons. One, it helps people struggling with obstacles to Christian faith, but more so, it helps us and gives us confidence in why we believe what we believe. Okay? It gives reason for faith. Okay, and what we're going to look at here is the first thing being the Kalam cosmological argument there. And it sounds very technical, but it's pretty basic and straightforward. And then at the end, I'm going to give you a handout that has a bunch of other types of arguments. And what we're going to identify is that there's multiple ways you can approach this idea. Why does something exist rather than nothing? Why do we have things? Why is there the universe rather than not having the universe? And even though it seems pretty straightforward, because we're here talking about the universe, so, you know, we exist, some people will question as to why that existence occurred and how it came about. And so that's going to be our first step in establishing this case for Christianity, is affirming what is the best possible explanation for our existence the way that we do exist. Okay, the Kalam cosmological argument actually came from a Muslim. Okay, and it's interesting because you were asking last week, is there an apologetics for other faith? And yes, there is an apologetic for other faiths. And right now we're looking at theism. This is an apologetic for theism. And so right now you're going to see, well, this argument, because we're arguing for the existence of a monotheistic or a one God, it's going to work for Judaism, it's going to work for Islam, and it's going to work for Christianity. Okay, but then we will get into some definite differences as to why we're different and why those gods don't match reality. Okay, the Kalam cosmological argument. What you're going to see there in that kind of diagram is at the top you have the universe. And the process we're going to establish to get today is that the universe had a beginning. And so we stem to the left there. And from there, we're also going to identify today that the beginning had a cause. It was caused rather than uncaused. Okay, and a lot of this you're going to say, this is really obvious stuff. But you'd be surprised when you're talking to people out there that in stubbornness or whatever else, they're going to deny some of these very basic principles that we think are obvious. And so after we determine that the beginning was a caused beginning rather than uncaused and just accidentally happened, then we're going to identify that the cause is personal rather than impersonal. Okay? So the Kalam cosmological argument. How many have ever heard this or read about this at all? Okay. There's a Christian philosopher out there, an apologist by the name of William Lane Craig. Sometimes he goes by Bill Craig. I would too, because it's a long name. But he is by far the expert on the Kalam cosmological argument. He actually dusted it off and found it buried in some Muslim theology book and found it and kind of has reorganized it. And this is what we have today. And the first point is whatever begins to exist has a cause. Whatever begins to exist has a cause. So anything that has a beginning has had a cause. For instance, you plant a tree, the tree begins, therefore it had a cause. Something caused because it has a beginning. Okay? And three things that kind of support that idea, the law of cause and effect. A beginning is an event. All right? So the planting of the tree and it beginning to grow, that's an event. And events are effects. And effects have causes. The second thing is something cannot cause its own existence. It's important to understand that. It's a fundamental principle, pretty straightforward. Something cannot cause its own existence. I didn't cause myself to come into being. Okay, something else caused my existence. Just the same way that the tree didn't just decide to exist one day. Why is that irrational? Why would it be irrational for something to cause its own existence? I mean, it seems really simple, but explain it to me like I'm a first grader.
It may seem simple, but goes against modern day belief right now. Modern day belief is that everything's here by chance. And that's a strong argument against their belief, and it's an argument that we need to pursue.
Okay. So why is this a fundamental principle to understand that we cannot cause our own existence?
We don't exist in the first place, we can't cause.
Right. If we're causing our own existence, it means we exist prior to our existing.
Right.
And it just gets crazy from there.
Right.
Okay, and the third idea, or third principle, is out of nothing, nothing comes. Okay? What comes from nothing? Nothing. Out of nothing, nothing comes. These are all in support of the first point. Whatever begins to exist has a cause. Any thoughts or questions on that, or anything confusing? Yes?
Who caused God to exist?
That's a great question.
That was the same.
That's your question? Okay. There's a couple of ways you can answer that. And I can't remember if we get any. We can just answer it now. It's a fundamental question because a lot of people think that's the end all and that's going to take out this quantum cosmology argument. There's one thing in logic that's called categorical fallacy. A categorical fallacy. And a categorical fallacy is when you measure something using a category that it doesn't belong in. For instance, if we were to say, well, how tall is yellow? Okay, or how much is green? Okay, those are things that are you're trying to measure something in by a category that's not intended to be measured by. And so that's one explanation to this idea of what caused God. Well, you're trying to measure something within a system by which it doesn't belong to be measured in. Another thing is we tend to, because we live in a physical, finite world where everything has a measurement of some sort, we think in terms of the measurements that are all around us. But to understand that God is outside of existence, and I've heard it put one way, it would be as if an author writing a novel, okay, has knowledge about the novel and writes, you know, about different characters within the novel. And then at some point asking, well, how come the author isn't inside of this novel and isn't affected by the events within the novel? It's because simply the author is outside of the novel and isn't bound by the storyline of the novel. The author is outside of the novel. And so that's another explanation as to this response. Well, if everything has a cause, then what caused God? Well, the catch is God isn't included in the everything. Okay, because it's really to say every physical thing has a cause. Or everything in the physical universe has a cause. And God is outside of the physical universe in the sense that he is not bound by it. Okay? Does that help explain that?
Yeah.
Okay. And it's really difficult because we want to be able to define and describe everything by way of this physical world we live in. But God is not within our structure. He can't be boxed in. And he's not bound by the physical laws that he himself created. Obviously, he isn't bound by them because he instituted them. Right? So that's an important distinction to make when talking about this. But no, that's a question that Richard Dawkins, one of the foremost leaders right now, a biology professor at Oxford, that in his book, The God Delusion, that's one of his big slam dunk points. Is he tries to come out and say, you know, Christians use this cosmological argument and all this kind of stuff, but what caused God? And then he just moves on. And he thinks that he's shattered Christianity. And anyone who is sincere in seeking would say, well, I don't know if that sums it up. And it really doesn't. So, okay. Does that make sense? Okay. All right. That was a great question, though. The universe began to exist is our second point. So whatever begins to exist has a cause. The universe has a beginning, is what we're arguing here. And the things that support this idea, and I'll try to say this without being too confusing, the series of events in time, so if we look at our history, a series of events in time is a collection formed by adding one after another. So one thing leads to one thing, another thing leads to another thing. A collection formed by adding one after another cannot be actually infinite. Can't actually be infinite, okay? The past constitutes a series of events in time, therefore the past cannot be actually infinite. Now, we need to define some terms there, so we'll jump down really quick to those blanks you have. Infinite, eternal, potential infinite, and actual infinite. Infinite is extending indefinitely, endless, or limitless. Extending indefinitely, comma, endless, comma, limitless. And a way you could look at this or picture this, because I'm a picture guy. That would be an example of infinite. Okay? And we're going to look at the distinction between infinite and eternal, because there is one. Oftentimes we don't think so. But infinite has a beginning, but has no end. It is endless, it is limitless, it goes on without end. Okay? Eternal is without beginning or end. So our arrow would look like this. Tanya's loving it. Okay, eternal is without beginning or end. Timeless. Now, in the past I've had questions about, well, when it comes to Scripture, sometimes it seems these are used synonymously. These are the same thing. And I did a little research into it, and actually, infinite, as we know it, is not actually used in the New Testament. And so it's not a Greek word found in the New Testament. It's a Hebrew word, or Aramaic. And it is comes from two words, ayin and mispar. Ayin and mispar. And it's interesting because ayin means without. So this means without. And mispar means innumerable. Okay, so it's without number. Okay, without limit. And so that would be defining that's infinite. Whereas eternal comes from ainois. And that is spelled in it literally means endless. It is sometimes a word referred to the world began or everlasting. Okay? And so this idea of infinite and eternal, although they seem to have the same meaning, there's not a very clear definition of one and the other. And so the terms that we have here with infinite and eternal are mathematical and philosophical terminology. Okay, and they help us understand as we discuss these type of things. And when we get into some of these arguments, when we talk about infinite, we're talking about has a beginning but no end. And we're talking about eternal, has neither a beginning nor end, it is timeless. Okay, infinite is endless. And so when we are talking about a series, let's see here, a collection formed by adding one after another cannot be actually infinite. Okay, so we need to define what that means. Potential infinite is your third line there, a task or series which extends indefinitely. A potential infinite is a task or a series which extends indefinitely. A task or series which extends indefinitely. And an actual infinite is a completed endless task or series. A completed endless task or series. Yes.
How could it be completed?
That's the point. A completed endless task or series. Okay? Now, people like to theorize about infinity. Okay? They like to theorize about infinite series. Well, what if? The reality is there cannot, by logic, be an actual infinite. Okay? Because it would be a completed endless task or series. Okay? I'll give you some examples here in a minute. But let's finish the Coulomb cosmological argument really quick. So a collection formed by adding one after another cannot be actually infinite. I mean, it cannot be a completed endless past. The past constitutes a series of events in time. Therefore, the past cannot be actually infinite. All right. Therefore, the universe has a cause. So whatever begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist. Therefore, the universe has a cause. Okay, that in its most basic form, the Kalam cosmological argument. Anything that begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist, therefore it has a cause. Any questions or thoughts about that? We're going to move on and try to explain some of these funny little things. Okay, there is an important distinction to be made between a potential and an actual infinite. What is that distinction? An actual infinite can't actually exist. Okay? Infinite is only a potentiality in our finite created universe. Okay? It's only a potential. You can only talk about it in theory. Because if something actually did, if you accomplish an infinite, endless series task, well then, by definition, it's no longer infinite. It's no longer endless. Okay?
But something can be a completed task with ongoing effects.
Okay, you can have completed tasks within that series, but if you get to the end of that series, then you can't be defined as infinite or potentially infinite, so that's true. So can an infinite task actually be completed? To do so requires completing an endless number of steps. If you begin with one, when will you finish counting every existing number? You won't. If you do, you haven't reached infinity yet, right? And if you won't, then the task involves a potential infinite, not an actual infinite. So at any given point, you will have a specific number. You will have reached a specific number, right? But you will not accomplish infinity, counting to infinity. So that remains potential. And the reason why this is important, and we'll get into this in a minute, is because of an idea called infinite regress. Okay, infinite regress cannot actually occur.
Can you repeat the third one? I'm sorry.
The third one? Which?
To complete counting?
Every existing number involves what?
Actual.
Thank you.
Oh, an actual.
Thank you.
Because you can't complete it.
Oh, to complete counting every existing number involves an actual infinite. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's good. I'm on par with all my top A's out there. Wanting their blanks filled in, that's okay. I can relate.
Good.
Now, can the universe, it can't be actually infinite, but it can be potentially infinite.
Well, they theorize about its potential infinite status, but it can never actually be infinite, right? And so we're talking about what is reality. And so when they start talking about, well, we came from an infinite past, the universe has always kind of been around, right? But we have a series of tasks, okay? A series of events that has occurred in our history as a universe, okay?
Just to add to that, you're talking about the size too, right? The size of the universe? Jamie, that's what, when you say infinite, meaning infinitely...
I wasn't thinking about the size, I wasn't,
okay.
But sure. I was just thinking.
I would just say there's different theories. There's theories that the universe is a set size, a static, unchanging size. There's theories that it's expanding, will continue to expand. And there's a theory that it's in a process of expanding and then eventually will collapse.
Right.
So there's different theories on that.
Like oscillating.
Yeah.
I guess what I think of is when on the cross Christ said, "It is finished." His task was done, but the consequences of that are ongoing in a certain point in time. But it is kind of a...
The redemption of mankind is a finite thing.
Yeah.
It's going to go on for a long time.
Until,
But it is not...
It is finished. So there was a point at which that task was done, but the effects are ongoing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there was it was a point in that series.
Yeah.
But it's never said or described as an infinite type of idea. Because... mankind will end, okay, in the sense of existing on earth. Now, that question, are the souls of humans, are they infinite, eternal, or finite?
Eternal.
According to these definitions.
It would be infinite because God tells us that God formed us.
But it says He knew us before we were born.
Well, that's true.
My question to you is this a categorical fallacy that we're talking about when we're trying to measure our souls?
I don't think so. I would argue that we're infinite, that we had a beginning.
Yeah.
There's a point. Our souls are not timeless. God is eternal. God is without beginning, without end. We have a very beginning, but we are to exist. The souls of men will continue on.
But He foreknew us before we came into existence. That's why He said He knew us.
Right, His conception of us in His perfect, because He's omniscient. Yeah.
My My thought is, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, so we weren't existing before then. Because that was the beginning.
In the beginning.
Okay, I guess I'm having trouble, and I'm not going to stay on this.
No, it's fine.
But I guess I'm having trouble with the potential. Okay, if the universe can't be potentially infinite, but we are potentially infinite, but there's obviously things that happen, and there's events in our life, in a series of events. How is that different? Just because...
I think it's different in the way that we exist. When we talk about the universe, and when biologists and philosophers talk about the universe, they're talking about a physical entity of sorts. Okay, so they're talking about physical existence. Whereas we exist not only physically, but metaphysically or non-physically. We have a soul, right? There's two parts. Well, I would argue that they're not too different. They're intertwined in a supernatural way, but we don't exist purely as physical beings, okay? And so that is the part of us that is infinite. And this gets into a whole other discussion that I'd love to have, but the idea that we are not bodies that have souls, we're souls that just have bodies, okay? Does that make sense?
Yeah. And if the universe ceases to exist, then we go into that realm where God is, which is outside, like you've talked about, outside the novel, outside the realm.
So the part of us that is infinite is our non-physical, our soul. That is that which identifies ourself as us, right? And I mean, because I'd love to have that discussion. Maybe we will at the end of this. But that's the distinction is the universe is a physical thing. We exist both physical and non-physical, because we have souls. Okay. Yes, sir.
So this, the heaven now and the earth now, is an actual infinite, because the heaven, it says heaven, this heaven and earth shall pass away, and then the heaven and earth.
Well, what it means is that we're finite. This physical universe is finite.
Right.
It has an end.
Yes.
So it's not an endless series. Right. It is a limited series, and we know that, and we'll get into this later, the second law of thermodynamics. Okay, the universe is dying, it's getting smaller, okay, and we're losing energy in the form of heat, and so the universe is coming to an end, therefore it necessitates a beginning, which is also something to understand. And so people want to talk about our limitless past, but if we have a beginning, that is not the case. We can't actually have an infinite past, because an infinite series cannot be complete. And if we have a beginning, then it's not a limited or a limitless series. Okay, so what is the significance about this? A beginningless past would entail a completed infinite series of past events or days. But by definition, an infinite series cannot be completed. Okay? Now this is the kicker. And this is, I think, the last sentence you have there. If the present day or moment has actually been reached, which it has, we're here. We're in a present moment right now. But the universe did not have a beginning. I mean, it's limitless. Then an actually infinite series of days or moments have been completed prior to today. If you think about it, if we have a limitless, infinite past, we would never arrive at today.
Yeah. Because we couldn't.
Because we never get here.
We never have a start. We just
keep going. Completed this. I mean, this is an end point, in a way. Tomorrow is a new end point. We'd never get there either. We'd never get to yesterday. Isn't that just crazy? When you think about it, actually completing an infinite series, if the past was limitless and endless, we would never be today. All right? It would be like starting at negative infinity and arriving at zero. And you'd never do that. Because if you started at negative infinity, you'd still be counting. Okay? Considering this is ground zero, perhaps. Zach, isn't that awesome? Yeah? Do you agree? Maybe not?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, the infinite universe.
Okay, so what's the... Who can, without looking at your notes, tell me the Coulomb cosmological argument? Oh. 3 points, okay? It includes a beginning, Mm-hmm. Yeah. It includes the universe, and it includes the cause, or being. You can. Okay, everyone look at your notes really quick. You got it? No, you don't. Okay, you can just tell them straight at me. I'll start calling.
Whatever begins to exist has a cause.
Whatever begins to exist has a cause.
And the universe began to exist, therefore the universe has a cause.
Amen. All right. Okay, we're going to get into, if you turn to the next page, arguments for first cause. We've concluded then that the universe had a cause. Okay, we're going to look at some historical arguments for this first cause, and then I'm going to give you a handout that has a bunch more, and we can talk about those. Okay, we have not observed any instance of something coming from nothing. Okay, we talked about that earlier. And we understand that something which does not exist cannot bring itself into existence. As a question arises as to how the existence of contingent beings is possible. So we have another definition we have to look at. And any explanation appealing to further contingent beings fails to satisfy the question. Therefore, according to Dallas Willard, it is logically necessary that there be something the existence of which does not derive from other things. Sounds very complicated. Let's break it down. Something is contingent if, here's a blank to fill in, it is dependent on something else for its existence. Something is contingent if it is dependent upon something else for its existence or to sustain its existence. It is dependent upon something else for its existence or to sustain its existence. So something is contingent if it's dependent for the beginning and or the sustaining of its existence. So give me some examples of contingent things in this room. Us, primary example.
Lights are on. Okay.
Right, so lights being on, there's a contingency there. Pretty much everything we see. Yep. Everything we see is somehow contingent as to the beginning of its existence or its sustained existence. Okay, and that's going to be important. What's that?
Everything. Pretty much everything.
Everything. Well, we want to get into the Holy Spirit being present in the room, then we're going to say pretty much. Okay. So Thomas Aquinas, he gave five examples of this first cause argument. He talked about it five ways. This is the third way he spoke of it. We see in the world things which exist, but do not have to exist, rendering their existence not necessary, but contingent. All things which exist cannot be contingent. Okay, and the way he breaks that down there, anything contingent at some time did not exist. If all things are contingent, then at some time there was nothing. If at one time nothing existed, then nothing would exist now. But something does exist. Therefore, all things cannot be contingent. And what he's arguing, and he says, therefore, something must exist, which exists necessarily rather than contingently. So there must be, there has to be, if everything we see and experience in the physical world is contingent, meaning it's dependent upon something else for its existence or its sustenance, then if that was the total story, everything is contingent and that's all, well then, at one point, there was nothing. Because when we break it back down to the very first contingent thing that caused everything else to exist, well then, what caused the contingent thing to exist if everything is contingent? Right? So he's arguing that there must be something that is necessarily existent and not contingent. And that, he argues, is God. God is the necessary rather than the contingent. Any thoughts? Or is that confusing in any way? Because I really want to break this down. This is a great explanation of this. And you notice we're using tools of logic. Okay, we haven't even gotten into evidential apologetics. We're not proving things by way of evidence. We're simply using the capacity, logic and rational thought to argue that, look, this can't be any other way.
If you believe in the Big Bang Theory, who created the rock that hit?
What's that?
Even if you believe in the Big Bang Theory, where'd the rock come from?
Because the rock is contingent, right? If you believe in the primordial soup, we all can't believe. Well, the primordial soup is contingent. Where did it come from?
Where did it come
from? Okay, so there has to be something that exists necessarily rather than contingently. Whatever begins is by nature contingent. That's the blank there. Whatever begins is by nature contingent and as such requires a cause. So, in another way to think about this, anything that is not eternal is contingent. Anything that is infinite is contingent because it has a beginning point, right? Only things that fall into this category are non-contingent. Anything outside of that are contingent. And right now, by definition, God is the only thing that is without beginning and without end. Okay. For anything which is contingent, it is necessary that it be given its being by a prior source. If all things were contingent, then everything would need to be given its being, but there would be no source to give it. It is then necessary that something exists which is not contingent whatsoever. It doesn't require something else to give it its beginning. Is this making sense? Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And there's plenty more like that that we'll look at here in a minute. Okay. And another philosopher, Leibniz, his model of contingency argument starts with the assumption that the universe began to exist. And this is a great instance where the Kalam cosmological argument would precede Leibniz's argument, because he starts out assuming that the universe began to exist. And he says, the physical universe exists. There must be a sufficient reason why the physical universe exists rather than nothing. A sufficient reason cannot be found in anything which is itself contingent. Therefore, there must exist apart from the universe a sufficient reason for its existence. Okay, so these are just many ways to reiterate this idea. There necessarily has to be a first cause, something that is not contingent, that starts the process of contingency in the first place. Okay? To assert that no independent first cause exists will require showing either one of two things. The past is infinite, which is philosophically difficult, right? And the second, the universe came out of nothing and uncaused, which is rationally. Okay, so to assert that no independent first cause exists, which is something that Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, all these atheists out there are trying to prove that there is no first cause, it requires them showing one of these or both of these to be true. The past is infinite, which we talked about. If that's the case, then we wouldn't arrive here today. So in discussing that with those authors, if you ever have a chance, say if there is an actual infinite past, you would have never arrived at the day you wrote your book about there not being an infinite, or about there being an infinite past. Okay, and then the universe came out of nothing and is uncaused. Right, and nothing comes from nothing. So the idea of something being eternal is not unusual due to the fact that unless one thinks something came from nothing, they must think something has always existed. Now this gets to the point where there's a lot of arguments that, well, the universe, that space has always existed, that it is eternal, it is without beginning and without end. That this oscillating universe, that we're in a infinite series of expanding and contrasting, that this occurs. Okay? But what they're talking about is a physical system that shows itself by physical laws that it is ending. Okay? And that it is composed of nothing but contingent beings. Which begs the question again, if everything is contingent, where did that first dependent thing come from? And what they do when they say, well, it came from another universe. The primordial soup that we have that started us actually was a deposit from another planet or alien or something. And all they're doing is begging the question. They're just removing it. Okay, well then where did the alien come from? Where did that other universe come from? And so when they continue about contingent beings, They have to go back, and you just keep pushing them all the way to the original contingent being that they'll finally agree upon, and then say, where did that come from? And so then we have a problem. Right? Okay. Any thoughts or questions?
Well, the question on the, because you're right, that's what they do. Parallel universe is real popular because they can't answer the question. They keep on going back. So basically, they're saying the universe is infinite. I mean, not infinite, but eternal. So if you have a...
They're saying an eternal, that the universe composed of nothing but contingent beings. What I would do is say, can you point out something within the physical or within the universe? I wouldn't even say physical. I'd say in the universe, it is not contingent. It is not dependent upon something else for its existence or its sustained existence. And they're going to continue to appeal to other contingent things.
Okay, so on that argument, so what we say, if the past is infinite, you can't get today, you cannot get to today. Now, why is that? Because I could start today and go back, can I?
But if you were to start at an infinite past?
Yes.
Because they're going to argue that the past is infinite.
Yes.
Right, go ahead. Where are you going?
Oh, just that you just keep going back to...
Where would you start from if you had an infinite past?
Today.
I mean, they're saying...
Today.
Let's say this is today, and they say that we have an infinite past, so they're back like this, never ending. At what point do you start to where you could arrive there? That distance is always going to... Right? So, but what they're saying is then, if we're going to start here and go this way, that we have an infinite future?
Well, I'm not sure.
So you want to start here and just go backwards.
Just go as a point.
Yeah. I think the underlying assumption is that time travels forward. Right.
Okay. And it would be like, let's say I agreed that I had... an infinite amount of numbers, okay? And I gave you all the odds. Would I have any less numbers?
No.
I would have the same amount, even if I give you all the odd ones.
We don't know what that number is.
I gave you the 1, 3, 5, 7, I just gave you all the odds. I would not have any less amount of numbers in my hand. And so that... The point of the argument is they're going to say that we have an infinite past, okay, that we've always existed, and that the universe has always existed. If that's true, then if we were to start from our infinite past, we would never actually be able to get to this point, because it would always, I mean, our starting point would never...
But what's the point of that? Why does that matter?
Because they argue for an infinite past.
It doesn't matter for us because we say there was.
We say there was a beginning.
It's not even a logic, really,
right.
That you're using there to disprove
an infinite past. Because they're going to say, well, we've always existed. There was no need for a beginning or a first cause because matter has always existed.
Sure,
things
sure.
Have always been around. Sure. If that's the case, then say, if we were to start from infinite past, how could I ever arrive today? And you couldn't.
You also could argue that you can never look at. Cannot find anything in this world today that just suddenly began to exist without a cause. You can know that you cannot find it.
Well, that's what contingent.
So there is a.
Yeah, there's nothing in the universe that's non-contingent. I mean, it would be like looking at this. This is another way, Ed. I'm only picking on you because I can. Let's say. They say the universe is eternal, without beginning or without end, okay? And we exist at this one point, okay? And we're going to ask them, okay, to try to get us here, to this point. Well, let's say they're going to pick a point here. Even if they found a finite place to start, this space in between is also eternal. And so that space is without limit. The gap between beginning and end. Does that make sense? It just continues to expand.
Our finite marks.
It's very, yeah. Okay. I love it. My high schoolers wrestle with this one. They love it.
Basically, what you're saying is it's illogical.
It would be illogical. That's why an actual infinite can never occur. You could never complete an endless task or series. Right? Okay. What I want to do is I have take two pages, and we're going to look at some more real briefly, and then I have an assignment for you.
Very
much.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, sorry.
Didn't want to ask you this.
Okay. The idea of something being eternal is not unusual due to the fact that unless one thinks something came from nothing, they must think something has always existed. The question is then, what is that thing?
What is the original non-contingent item?
What is something that has always existed? What is that necessary? Yeah. Necessarily existing. Yes, math is a wonderful thing. I have to say, math is a wonderful thing. I sing that to Tanya just about every day. Okay, are those getting around? Stretch break. Good stuff. You like it, Mike?
You say universe is an effect which requires an adequate cause, and the whole is sufficient cause.
Right. Is an effect? Yeah. It helps people to think of it as events. That all these points in time are events occurring. An event requires something to cause it. You can't think of an event without it having a cause. Should have two pages, front and back. Okay. There's categories for the classic arguments for the existence of God. We've just touched on one today, the cosmological arguments. Okay, and the cosmological, they assume perception of cause and effect. There's some that are teleological. They assume perception of a complex design and purpose. And so when you look at like an intelligent designer, have anyone heard of that idea?
Yeah.
The intelligent design theory, that's appealing to teleological arguments. And then the ontological, they assume perception of aesthetic standards. Anthropological, they assume perception of moral standards. And so you guys have probably heard one or several from each of these categories. And there's just a few I want to hit on. We'll skip cosmological since we've talked about those today. Under teleological arguments, I like the design one, the first one under there. Again, teleological, considering the design and order within reality. This is a good one. It says, the universe has a credible amount of complex order and intelligibility. This order is the product of chance or intelligent design. So there's only two options. Chance cannot explain this design because chance cannot produce order. Chance can only be understood as chance when presupposing order. Okay? That's like, you can only understand wet if you understand dry as well. Okay, so you can only understand chance if you presuppose that there's an order, because there's nothing in order to define it by. The universe is a product of intelligent design. Design comes from a designer. The universe is a product of a designer. Okay? Now, like I said, none of these is going to prove God beyond, you know, with mathematical certainty. But these are going to give us several ideas and give us a lot of confidence into the best explanation for the beginning of the universe. Okay? Okay. Ontological arguments, considering the ideas within reality. The third one, the Plantinga one. Alvin Plantinga is a philosophy professor at Notre Dame, and he put this one together. It's one that I really like. God exists in the understanding, but not in reality. Okay, so it's the idea that some people think that God exists only in our minds. Okay, existence in reality is greater than existence in the understanding only. So if something were to exist in our imagination, it would be even greater if it existed in reality as well. Okay, a being having all of God's properties plus existence in reality can be conceived. We can conceive of this idea, a greater being by which none can be conceived of. A being having all of God's properties plus existence in reality is greater than just a idea of God, right? Because it exists in reality. A being greater than God can be conceived, and by this it's referring to the idea of God versus the reality of God. So a being greater than God, because God in this definition is just the conception of God. Okay? It is false that a being greater than God can be conceived. Hence, it is false that God exists in the understanding, but not in reality. God exists in the understanding, hence God exists in reality. Fun? Okay? Now, obviously, you're not going to call up your buddy or email or write a letter to a friend who's struggling with Christianity, and you're just going to just throw these all out in sequence. Probably not going to work very well. And that's where the assignment comes into play. Anthropological arguments on the last, the back of the second page. Considering the human condition, a lot of these are really good. The first one, real moral obligation is a fact. We experience that every day, and that is the norm. Either the atheistic worldview is correct, or the religious worldview is correct. The atheistic view is incompatible with moral obligation, therefore religious view of reality is correct. Let's see here. Then there's Pascal's wager, which is, it's kind of like if you were a betting man, that would be the one to appeal to. It says your odds are better to believe in God than not to believe in God, basically. So, as you look through those, obviously you might not have had time to now, but you can ask me questions, you can call here at the church, or email me at any time and I can help you hash through these. But the assignment is this. And I was going to bring an example of one that one of the high schoolers did. But what I had them do is sometimes apologetics seems so it seems not very practical in a conversational way. And so what I said, I said, assume that you are at college or you're somewhere in life and you have to take one of the arguments that we've looked at and you have to write a conversation implementing one of these arguments. Okay? And so they would write coffee house scenes where they're studying for a final and they're looking at the coffee cup and they're identifying something about the coffee cup that, wow, have you ever thought about coffee cups? That they come from a factory somewhere, someone put this thing together, but then they're also made of paper, so they come from trees. But then that tree must have come from somewhere too. And so they appeal to the contingency and then they get into this discussion of the existence of God in just a conversational way. And so my assignment to you, and we're going to share these next week, not everyone has to share. If you're like, I don't want mine to be shared because it's not very good, then you don't have to share. But I will, if no one wants to share, then I will call on people. So just write a conversation, and it can be a real conversation with a real person, and you can just change the names to say protect the innocent or something. But I want you to basically creatively compose a conversation between you or between two characters. It doesn't even have to be you. Implementing one of the arguments that you find in the appendix or one of the arguments that we talked about in the regular notes and put together a dialogue. And it's going to force you to take these off of the bullet point list that's and you're going to be forced to think creatively and actually, how does this work in a discussion? I had one student have a conversation occur on the chairlift in 12 minutes. They just got into discussion about skiing. It was actually Luke Medin, of all people. Who would ever think of skiing? So, yeah. I want you guys, and they can be two paragraphs long, it could be a page, length isn't the issue. I just want you guys to think in form of conversation. How could your conversation? A realistic situation. Okay? Any other questions about that? Dustin thought he was all done with school too. Okay. Well, thank you guys.